Crowder. My name is Wilkins. I can power that ship you want.
So?
Of course, what I have in mind won't be anything like that meaningless for you.
What?
Well, Rock, my motor requires a difference here in my head.
It so happens that I'm presently supporting half a dozen people who make this. None of them have been successful. What makes you think your idea will work?
Simple enough. The common magnet.
What?
Electromagnetism. Utilization of the force of gravity, or its opposite in this case, counter-gravity.
Thank you very much. If you'll forgive me now,
Just a moment, Mr. Crowder. There's one thing more. This.
I've seen pieces of metal before, thank you.
How high from your desk would you say I'm holding it?
I'm very sorry, Mr. Wilkins. Do you want to leave, or do you want to be escorted out?
This will only take a second, sir. How high from your desk would you say I'm holding this piece of metal?
A foot and a half.
And if I let go, then in less than a second, a fraction of a second, it should fall to your desk.
Now, look, I don't want the surface of that desk marred.
But will it be? You see, I have let go of the metal, is that right?
What? Good Lord.
Many seconds ago, it should have crashed to the desk, am I right?
This is incredible.
Well, if you want to speak to me anymore, I'll be right outside.
But it hasn't fallen.
That's right, sir. It hasn't fallen.
It floats in the air.
That's right, sir. It floats in the air.
How do you do it?
Well, why don't you call your engineers and ask them? I'll wait outside.
Get me my engineers immediately. Mr. Wilkins, you're quite right. This piece of metal is apparently counter-gravity. My engineers can give me no explanation.
Thank you, sir.
What do you want?
I want to build a spaceship using this material. No great expenditure, a hundredth of the cost your behemoth sitting out there in your building yard, and three other things. Workshop, expert mechanical assistance, and an answer to one question.
What is the question?
Why do you want so much to build this ship?
Frankly, because I love power. Because I'm ambitious. I want to be the master, not only of one world, but of worlds.
That's an honest answer. And that's as far as your thinking goes.
What else is there?
But there's my answer. I want to leave this planet and go to Mars. Because there are strange wonders there. Because there will be scarlet sunsets over barren wastes. And in the star-strewn night, the thin, cold air of a dying world stirring in restless sighs across the valleys of the dry canals. You may laugh out loud if you wish, Mr. Crowder. I prefer that to the peculiar, repressed smile you're exhibiting now.
You're a very lucky man, Mr. Wilkins, to have scientific talent, because your talents as a poet are inferior and very sentimental. Well, all right, you're a sentimentalist and I'm manologic. No matter, we can work together, you and I. Your workshop will be ready by morning. If you need money or materials or personnel, just tell my engineers. You'll get it, or I'll know the reason why, and that's all.
Thank you, sir.
Get me my engineers.
Yes, Mr. Crowder.
Now, we have 50 men working on preserving that useless hulk out there in the construction yard. Lay them off. Now, how many others?
But the ship will deteriorate if we do that, sir.
Let it rot. Lay them off.
Yes.
Now, how many other employees are still working for us on the project?
About 3,000, sir, including the people working on experimental motors.
Get rid of them.
But, sir...
Get rid of them.
Well, Mr. Crowder, I never thought you'd drop this project. You were so adamant on it.
I'm not dropping anything but dead wood. You saw what Wilkins had to offer. He's my man, and the rest is junk.
Mr. Crowder, he might fail. We ought to have a minimum of protection against...
I say he won't fail.
Yes.
You just lay everybody off that isn't needed. Give him 2 weeks' pay and my thanks for a thankless job well done. That's all.
Yes, sir. I'll get it done, sir. What a year's work.
Yes. And 10 years or 20 years, and I do the same thing. That's why you're an engineer and I'm an executive. That's why you work for me, because when I have to, I can be ruthless with my own mistakes. What are you waiting for?
I was just thinking, Mr. Crowder, what would happen to me if my usefulness to you were over? I've worked for you for 30 years now.
Just don't give me any occasion to consider your usefulness terminated. That oughtn't be too hard.
Yes. Mm.
What?
Nothing, sir. I'll make the arrangements at once.
Who are you? What do you want?
I tried to stop him, sir.
Well, speak up, man.
My name is Jar Vizashtri. I am an electronics expert.
Oh, yes, I remember. You're the Asian. Well, come in.
Do you want me, sir?
Never mind. Just stay outside. Close the door behind you.
Yes, sir.
Sit down, Vizushtuli.
Thank you, no. I want to give you a gift before I leave.
Oh, you leaving? I thought we still needed you.
I resigned.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm told you're a good man.
I want you to understand what's behind this gift. I was working on a power project in my country, which would have meant a tremendous rise in the standard of living for millions of my people. I was unable to resist the money you offered.
Had you resisted, even more money would have been forthcoming. I placed no limit on your worth to me.
I understand. But you see, I did not come without a sense of guilt, because there was no one in my country who could take my place.
I would assume that.
And now I discovered that what I did was for nothing. The spaceship on which I worked is being dismantled.
That's right.
So I have been corrupted by you at a whim. I think you have too much power, sir. I think you use your power for evil, selfish purposes.
Selfish, yes. Only sentimentality is evil.
I think otherwise. And so, in order that you shall not corrupt anyone else, I have this gift for you. Here you are, sir.
Oh.
And just one more shot for good measure, to make sure you are really dead. Good.
There's a man on his way out by the name of Jar Vizushtuli, an engineer. He's not to be molested. He probably won't stop the cashier, so I want a check for 6 months' salary in advance mailed to his home address. The man showed a certain quality of ruthlessness which is deserving of recognition. And have the chief of the company police bring me a new bulletproof vest. This one seems to have been dented in two places.
Crowder's engineers, was finished within 4 months. It was small. It was shaped like a disc. It gleamed brightly, even in the smoky haze of an October sunset. Inside, Crowder and Mr. Wilkins, in a small cubicle at the heart of the machine, were surrounded by many instruments of a complicated nature. Outside, huge crowds gathered to witness the test. They stirred and murmured, waiting restlessly, as inside the control room of the craft, Wilkins installed the final secret part he had not revealed to those who built his driving apparatus.
Well, Wilkins, what's holding us up?
Nothing now. Or sentiment, perhaps.
What?
A wish to look once more on Earth's familiar scenes. Here, now the screening is removed. Look. Look at the people out there.
Never mind looking out there. Let's leave that thing closed. You're a sentimental fool. Or are you afraid? Or did you decide at that last minute that your invention won't work?
It will work. Oh, sit down, Mr. Crowder. And do me a favor. When I press this button, will you please press the button on the arm of the chair you're seated on? I'll tell you when.
Turn on your motor. I want to hear its roar and feel its tug as we cut loose from Earth's gravity and fly outward into space. That might be a moment in which I'd share your sentimentality.
I'll press your button now, sir. Thank you.
This is all a hoax. I'm beginning to distrust you, Wilkins. When are we going to take off? You said at 5 sharp, and it's 2 minutes after 5 now. Well, do we move or don't we?
Mr. Crowder, we're already moving. The button you pushed was to nullify the effects of acceleration. If you don't mind, I'd like to open the screen again. Now, if you care to look for yourself...
Wilkins, we're in space. Look down at Earth. How far we've come. Why, it's no bigger than a toy balloon. A dime. A firefly. Man, Wilkins, you've done it.
Yes.
I swore to be the first man to conquer space, and I've done it. It's a triumph of power and ambition.
And... sentiment.
Your blast sentiment. Your maudlin dreaming would have died unborn except for me. I made this possible, Wilkins. Don't ever forget that. My capital, my forcefulness, my will. Look out there. Space. Stars that never were seen from Earth. But this is only the beginning. We'll build a larger model. One great enough to hold 100 men, 1,000, and cargo besides. I'm the master of the planets. Wilkins, turn back now.
No.
What? I said turn back.
No.
Oh, we've proved the ship can fly. Now turn back. I want to start work at once in preparation for the long flight to come.
Not so. We will go on.
What are you doing, defying me? Are you crazy? I'll break your puny little body into pieces.
Mr. Crowder. Can you control this ship? Would you like to be stranded out here in space? Just adrift in space without control? Would you like that?
Turn back!
No.
You're crazy, you're crazy.
Crazy? No. Sentimental? Yes. Your money and ambition paved the way, that's true. But sentiment was the vital factor that sent me to you. You'll forgive me if I remove these primitive clothes.
Who are you?
Well, it's all right, Mr. Crowder. There is no need to be so terrified because you've had your first close look at a Martian going home.
Heard another adventure into the unknown world of the future. The world of...
Dimension!
A private detective receives many strange assignments, but none has ever received one quite like that given to the investigator we're going to tell you about next week, as we bring you from the pages of the September issue of Astounding Science Fiction, Untitled Story.
Dimension X is presented each week by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of the magazine Astounding Science Fiction. Today, Dimension X has presented The Vital Factor, written for radio by Howard Rodman, from the story by Nelson Bond. Featured in the cast were Raymond Edward Johnson as Crowder, John McGovern as the engineer, and Louis Van Ruten as the Martian. Your host was Norman Rose. Music by Albert Berman. Dimension X is produced by William Welch and directed by Fred Way.
Dread.
Dragnet, the story of your police force, is next on NBC.
In just a moment, you will hear The Clock, presenting transcribed the premiere of a new thrill drama by Lucille Fletcher, the author of Sorry Wrong Number and other noted studies in suspense. Listen now to
The Clock.
The American Broadcasting Company presents another in a series of dramatic programs, The Clock. From Hollywood, The Clock tonight stars two distinguished players, Elliot Lewis and Jeanette Nolan, and is produced and directed by radio's master of the art of suspense, William Spear.
Sands of time. Clocks. All over the city, clocks. Little clocks and big ones, new ones just learning to count. Old ones, old hands of the game. Clocks standing aloof from their owners, taking no part in their joys or sorrows. Their faces immutable, impervious. All over the city, the clocking needles, sewing the fabric of life. And the death which must make room for new life. Stitching time, the clock, whose face shows no anger or delight or surprise. Because time sees all things. From the two-room walk-up flat on the lower Third Avenue, New York, where Mr. and Mrs. Bela Bozniak live over a second-hand clothing store, you can hear, if the Third Avenue elevator isn't going by, the chimes of the huge clock atop the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company building.
Charlotte. I'm so sorry to be so late, but I overslept myself. I was dreaming.
Breakfast is over 2 hours ago. Everything is put away.
So, of course. But perhaps there's some coffee.
I don't keep stale coffee standing around all day. If you want, you can make some for yourself.
Thank you, Charlotte. Such a dream I had. Does my head ache? Do I feel depressed? Is there by any chance a piece of coffee cake in the house?
No. Uncle Miklos came by this morning.
Uncle Miklos? Will he want?
He wants you to come down and make fresh potato salad. The boy from the high school didn't come.
But I thought it was my day off. All right, Charlotte, I will go. Just as soon as I have my coffee. Oh, what a dream. That's a terrible dream. Cannot seem to get it out of my head. Do you know what I was dreaming, Charlotte?
Who cares?
I dreamed I was being electrocuted. Electrocuted, Charlotte. Isn't that terrible?
The water's boiling.
And it was so real, too. I was in a cell, a real cell in a prison. White, glaring white, like a bathroom. I was lying on a cot with my hands behind my head when suddenly I heard these footsteps outside the door. Then I jumped up like a madman. And it came over me that the footsteps were my jailers. They were coming for me, to kill me. I was condemned to die.
Will you hurry? Drink your coffee. I told them you'd be right
down. Yeah, but the coffee's so hot. There's a cup for you, Joe.
No.
And then, these guards came into my cell and dragged me from the bars. There were four guards in gray uniforms. There was also a tin priest. Now, everything was very quiet. All the other prisoners shut up. They watched me from behind their cell doors. I could feel their eyes burning at me. I could hear my feet shuffle, shuffle along the floor. I felt so weak.
No, you don't. Have another cup. Give me that pot.
But it would help clear my head a little. After a dream like that.
Get your clothes on. That will clear your head.
In a minute. I'm just trying to remember.
Remember what?
Why they were electrocuting me. What I had done.
Oh, what an idiot. He worries about his dream.
Yeah. I suppose it's silly. But that is the trouble with dreams. They tell you one little thing, And it is so real. But the rest of the story, they keep it to themselves.
But are you going to stand around here talking all day?
No, no, I was just going. I'll be right down. Charlotte? I don't want to disturb you, Charlotte.
You can't come in. I'm scrubbing this kitchen, and I don't want you making tracks across my
floor. I know, Charlotte. I wouldn't want to mark your nice, clean floor. It's only my coffee.
Go down to the drugstore for your coffee.
It's closed on Sundays.
So? I told you when we were having breakfast.
I know, but 8 o'clock. It's such an early hour for Sunday. And Uncle Miklos kept the store open last night till 11.
You didn't come home last night at 11.
A little glass of beer at Kleinman's. Would you begrudge me that after I was on my feet till 11 o'clock at night? Please, Charlotte. I don't feel so good this morning, either.
Naturally, after Kleinman's.
I'm not sleeping so good, not all week. I'm having the same bad dream.
Yeah, all this time excuse.
But it's true. Do you remember? I told you I dreamed I was electrocuted. I was in that cell. Well, every night now, for a week, I have been dreaming about that cell.
So what?
And in one corner, there's a bed. Two magazines, the Look magazine and the Hungarian Weekly. I can see them just as clear as if they were in this kitchen.
Well, move those chairs out of the way. I want to scrub under the table.
Don't you think that's very clear, Charlotte?
What's clear?
To dream all that. Every night.
Ah, who cares about dreams? They're all the junk in your head.
Ah, but it is very clear, just the same, to be there night after night. Oh, yes. Last night, Uncle Miklos was there, too.
Huh? What?
I mean, in the dream. He came to see me in my cell. Wasn't that queer?
I don't see anything so queer about that.
Can you imagine Uncle Miklos giving me anything?
That's a fine thing to say. Who brought you to America? Who gave you the job in the delicatessen?
I didn't mean that way, Charlotte. I meant...
What did you mean?
I meant... Well, Uncle Miklos is always so careful with food in the delicatessen. But in the dream, it was a very nice roast chicken in the dream. With plenty of breast and stuffing. And Uncle Miklos even had a bottle opener in his basket to open up the schnapps. He kept telling me to eat. Eat! Eat, Bella! He kept saying. Stuff yourself! I can hear how he said it. You only got another month to live. Maybe I should go to see a doctor. He should give me a thorough checkup.
Maybe you should go to a fortune teller, too. There's lots of places who'll be glad to take your money. If you only got the money.
Might be a good idea.
Only you don't got the money.
But, Charlotte...
Will you keep your dirty feet off my nice clean floor?
I'm sorry, Charlotte. I'll wipe it off.
Oh, get out, will you? Go down to the drugstore and get yourself some coffee. Radio in the middle of the afternoon yet.
Well, what time is it?
4 o'clock. Why aren't you in the store?
I just came up here for a nap.
A nap? In the middle of the day? Where is Uncle Miklos?
Uncle Miklos went out. There was no customers. I was very tired. But if it is 4 o'clock, Uncle Miklos was coming back at 3.
So Uncle Miklos was coming back at 3? Now you're in a fine mess. A fine, nice mess.
Well, maybe he's not back yet.
Hey. And what's this bottle of beer doing under the sofa?
What bottle of beer?
So, that's why you were so tired. Why you didn't hear me. Why the radio was playing so loud I could hear it halfway down the street. drunk.
Oh, please, Charlotte. It was so hot. And I wasn't really drunk. I was only asleep. I was having a terrible nightmare.
Where did you get this bottle? From Kleinman's? Or from Uncle McWash's store?
From the store. But I will pay him back, Charlotte. And listen to my heart. How it's still pounding. How can a man wake up quickly when he's dreaming he's on trial for his life? Think of it. 1,000 people looking at you, and the judge with his black cap on, and the jury standing there, and then one of them getting up and pointing. And you hear the words, clear, clear. Guilty. Bela Bozniak is guilty. And is condemned to death.
How many times do I have to tell you never to touch anything in that store that belongs to Uncle Mikwas?
Charlotte, why should they say I am guilty?
Because you are. You are guilty of stealing Uncle Mikwas' bottle of beer and cheating on your time in that store. Gnats yet. Gnats! Like a millionaire. And how do I know what other things you are guilty of? Maybe you steal from the cash register. Who knows? Maybe you stuff yourself full of blutwurst and pickles when Uncle Miklos is not looking. Maybe you insult the
Charlotte.
Customers.
What a terrible thing to say.
I know what I hear from Uncle Miklos.
What do you hear from Uncle Miklos?
Lots of things. But all I got to say to you, Bela Bozniak, is you better watch your step from now on. You better behave yourself.
Why?
You heard me.
It's no use, Charlotte. It's no use. I got to see a doctor or something.
Oh, get out of that bed, lazy good for
Charlotte,
nothing.
I'm really sick. I must have a growth in my brain.
Yeah, there's always something the matter with you when it comes time
Nobody
for work.
Nobody keeps on dreaming the same dream night after night. Nobody. With a normal mind in his head.
Keep quiet. I don't want to hear about your dreams.
Always, always, I got this terrible guilt in me. Like a pain. All night long, I'm running away. I'm hiding from people who are trying to catch me.
So why do you run? Why don't you get caught?
I am on the streetcar, riding under the L down Third Avenue. There are lots of people. I'm squeezing myself tied up against the window, turning my face out so no one will recognize me. I am pulling my coat collar up around my face and my cap down over my eyes. I am wearing dark glasses. I am running along the Lightstone Bridge. It's summer. A bright, flaring day. I am like a little black speck on the big steel bridge. And over my head, they are looking at me from airplanes. And under the bridge, they are watching me from boats. The automobiles are racing after me, honking their horns. Far, far ahead, at the end of the bridge, I see the man at the toll gate, waiting to stop me. He's a tall man with glasses, a brown overcoat, bald. His name is Mr. Turner. Please, Charlotte, don't do that.
Maybe if the covers are off you, you will shut your mouth and get out of that bed.
I can't. I'm too weak.
Lazy, good for nothing. Get up!
Over to the doctor.
So, you were over to the doctor. I wish you joy to the doctors. And what did the doctor do for you, millionaire?
Nothing.
Nothing. $3 he pays to the doctor for a visit, and the doctor does nothing for him. Wonderful.
Dr. Stumpold was not a mind doctor. It's for the stomach and the heart. He knows nothing about the brain.
Oh, so now he figures that out. Dr. Stumpold is not a mind doctor. Now. After he throws away the $3.
He gave me these pills.
Yeah, medicine already. How much did they cost?
They are sleeping pills. I don't need sleeping pills. I don't want to go to sleep.
So in this case, then, Why did you buy them?
I am afraid to sleep. Every time I sleep, there is that Mr. Toyner waiting for me again. He is everywhere. Beside the ashcans and the air shaft, on the fire escape, in the hallway behind the baby carriages. I even dream he's in the delicatessen. He's looking over the counter at me like a customer. He's hiding behind the herring barrels.
Hey, give me those pills. You didn't take any yet, did you?
He's even in Kleinman's. He's sitting there in the back room drinking a glass of beer and looking out the plate glass for me to go by. His face is green and red in the neon sign going on and off outside. Now green, now red. And sometimes I hear him whispering.
That's good. It isn't a special prescription. I can take that back to the drugstore. You didn't even open the bottle.
He whispers to somebody about me. He tells people what I have done. And I know it's true. I am guilty. Oh, how I am guilty.
I'll go take that back to the drugstore right now.
But why am I guilty? What have I done? Charlotte, think. How could I be guilty? Is it because of Mama? That I left her there hungry and never brought her over like I promised. But you yourself, Charlotte, said there was no room. And the money Uncle Miklos paid me. How could I have brought Mama here to starve? How could I have paid a boat trip when there was nothing for us half the time to pay the rent? But maybe it is Mama cursing me from the grave. Charlotte! Charlotte! Don't leave me alone, please.
Charlotte. Hello, Charlotte. I got good news for you, Charlotte. At last, I just slept.
Huh.
And the dreams, the bad dreams, have gone away. 2 hours, 3 hours, I was sleeping, and there was nothing, just sleep. Isn't that wonderful, Charlotte? I guess I'm cured, huh? You went out and left me alone. I was so tired. But I was afraid to sleep. I went to the park and I lay down on a bench. But the minute I closed my eyes, there was that Mr. Turner again with his face green and red. And then I went over to Kleinman. I had only 2 little beers. The pianola was playing. It was nice and cool and dark.
Charlotte! Charlotte! What is it? Please, Charlotte! You're not that mad at me, are you?
You numbskull! You good-for-nothing shillelagh!
Oh, Charlotte, please, what has happened?
What has happened? You are fired, that is what has happened. Uncle Miklos refuses to put up with you anymore.
What?
He's through with you, do you hear? Through! There is a boy, a high school boy, working in your place full-time.
No, you... You mean making the potato salad, too?
Yes, making the potato salad, too. And waiting on the customers. Now loafing on the sidewalk and taking naps and talking like a lunatic. And getting drunk every other night. And now what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
I will go down and speak to Uncle Miklos.
He will go speak to Uncle Miklos at 2 o'clock in the morning, yet he will speak to Uncle Miklos and get thrown out on his ear and go to the hospital and cause more expense.
Uncle Miklos, he will get over it, Charlotte.
Yes, that's what you think. You haven't talked to Uncle Miklos yet.
But Charlotte...
2 days. 2 days! Yes, Uncle Miklos couldn't go to Hoboken to see about the cheesecake. You were lying homesick in bed. With what? With the fever, with the stomach trouble, with the bad leg? No! With dreams! Bad dreams, yes, like a baby!
But Charlotte...
And where are you? When the customers are telephoning for the orders, they should be sent up right away. Upstairs, sleeping, taking a nap. And where are you Friday night? The busiest night in the store. Seeing Dr. Stubhogan throwing out your good money to a crack. And where are you today when Uncle Miklos is going to play in the Interbrooks Hungarian Checkers Tournament?
Checkers Tournament today?
Yes!
I'm sorry, I forgot.
Drunk. Sleeping. In Klein. Hoffman's back room.
Oh, never. I wouldn't stay away on purpose, Charlotte.
Yeah, that's all the thanks Uncle Miklos gets. After all he's done for you. I don't blame him. He gave you plenty of rope you should hang yourself with. He closed his eyes to plenty.
I'll apologize. I'll explain to him everything in the morning. He's not unreasonable. After all, he's your uncle, Charlotte.
Too bad for him.
He wouldn't let us starve, Charlotte. Uncle Miklos couldn't.
It's 9 o'clock. How much longer are you going to wait to go down and speak to Uncle Nicholas?
In a minute. I'm going right away. I just got to pull myself together a little.
Yeah, I thought so. You don't talk so brave this morning, do you?
It's not that. It's just... I'm sick. I got those same bad dreams back all over again.
Sure, you got them. Whenever you got something to do you don't want to do, back they come. Wonderful.
No, Charlie. I'm not afraid of Uncle Miklos now. I am afraid of myself.
But don't think I'm such a sucker, Bella. I've listened to you complaining long enough. I don't fall for that same tune forever.
Listen, Charlotte, listen to me just for once. Job can wait a few minutes.
Oh, the job can wait, can that? That's a new one, the job can wait.
I have done something. Maybe I did it in my sleep. Maybe I'm a sleepwalker. Maybe I climbed down the fire escape sometime and went into somebody's kitchen somewhere and committed a murder. I couldn't dream such things all by myself. Last night, I dreamed I'd just killed somebody. It had just made 2 o'clock. I was coming out of a window, climbing out over the sill. It was night. There was a fire escape with flower pots going down into an air shaft. I started to climb down. It was a long way to the ground. I crept down like a monkey. And as I went, I could see into all the dark windows of the flats. A man was eating his supper, and his radio was playing, and a baby was crying. And all the time, I kept holding my breath, afraid they would see me. Because upstairs, there was somebody lying in a room, white, like a kitchen, dead, that I had killed.
Oh! Shut up! Lunatic! Shut up with that nonsense, or I'll clap you in the crazy house right now. Now, get downstairs, Uncle Miklos, and get that job back. You hear? Do you hear me, Bella? Did you hear what I said? Look at you, shaking like a leaf. You're an old man already. You're not afraid of Uncle Miklos, not much. You're afraid of everything. Afraid of your own shadow, your own crazy dreams. A fine man I throw myself away on. A fine hero. Dad, what are you looking at me that way for? You don't think I can hit you, huh? You think I'm going to stand around here forever wasting my time on a good-for-nothing? You think I'm good only to wash your clothes and keep your house clean? You think I got no strength in my hands? I can hurt you worse than that sometime. Much worse. You get your life. Well, what are you standing there for then? Are you going down now? Or not?
I am going, Charlotte. I'm going.
Bella. Where are you? Bella? What are you doing in the kitchen at this time of night? Making sandwiches? There's no bread for sandwiches. What are you doing with that knife?
I was just dreaming. He had another strange dream, Charlotte.
Get into bed. Put that knife back into the drawer.
I was dreaming. I was washing my hands, Charlotte. Over there. In that sink.
So, what?
And they were covered with blood. I was washing this knife, too. It was covered with blood, too.
Yeah. And what's so... What's so strange about that?
It was your blood, Charlotte.
My blood?
Yeah.
Transcribed from Hollywood, The Clock is produced and directed by William Spear, the master of suspense. And tonight starred Jeanette Nolan and Elliot Lewis. This evening's play was written by Lucille Fletcher. The Clock theme was composed by Bernie Green. Our musical director is Basil Adlam. Next week, same time, you will hear Kathy and Elliot Lewis as stars of...
The Clock.
Might be telephoned to name the new mystery melody for fabulous jackpot prizes. Be sure to hear it on Stop the Music tonight over this ABC station.
You, finding life rather dull, dreaming again of exotic places, wishing you were somewhere else, we offer you escape.
Escape with us now to England and the story of a hard rock miner trapped in a deserted mine beneath the icy waters off the Cornish coast, as Hammond Innes tells it in his gripping tale, The Killer Mine.
Rain had stopped when I reached Penzance just before dark. At the waterfront, there were men dressed much the same as myself, in seamen's jerseys and jacket. Nobody took any notice of me, and I suddenly felt at ease for the first time since I landed in England. I lit a cigarette and fished out of my pocket the worn and dirty bit of notepaper which bore Dave Tanner's address. 2 Harbour Terrace, Penzance, Cornwall. I read the note again. Dear Jim, I hear things aren't what they were in Italy. If you're getting tired of it and want a change of air, I can fix you up with a job in England, no questions asked. It's a mining job and right up your street, your old chum, Dave. Well, up to now, I'd been lucky. No questions had been asked. So I went to meet my old chum at number 2 Harbour Terrace.
Yes?
Mr. Tanner in?
Who?
Tanner, Mr. Dave Tanner.
Oh, nobody of that name lives here.
Oh, well, he's no friend of mine. I've come a long way to see him. Look, here's the letter he sent me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, look, you don't have to be afraid. I'm not a cop. He's a Welshman, dark hair and eyes, a bit of a limp.
Oh, maybe it's Mr. Jones you're wanting, but he's not here now either.
Do you know when he'll be back?
No, I,
Hello. You're hurt.
Oh, no, I...
Well, that's blood on your hands.
Oh, one of the lodgers. He cut himself on glass.
Davey's here, isn't he? He's here and he's hurt.
No. You can't come in.
Move over. Where is he?
I tell you, you're mistaken.
What the devil are you doing, girl? Come and fix his arm before I lose any more blood. Who was it anyway?
It's all right, Dave. It's me, Jim Price.
Jim Price? Fine time for visiting you've chosen. Well, come on up, man. I'm bleeding to death.
We went upstairs, and inside his room, Dave was sitting, white-faced, on the edge of a bed. He winced as the girl daubed iodine into what was obviously a bullet wound. And then the bandage went on.
Hey! Not too tight, girl.
Well, what happened, Dave?
Nothing. It's all right. Tell you later. I'm glad to see you, Bach. Sil.
Yes, Davey?
Wrap up some food. Find another raincoat.
But you can't go out.
Don't argue, girl. It's time to go now.
All right.
It's better. Now we can talk. You've come over for that job, eh?
Yes.
Got a show with no questions asked?
I managed. It cost me my last farthing, though. I've got no papers.
You got a shore. That's what matters. Well, Jim, it's a mining job, as I told you. Here, help me on with my coat.
Yes, well,
Easy. There. I want to be shut of this place. Your way's the same as mine. I'll tell you about the job as we go.
Where? Where do we go?
Cripple Z's tin mine. But there's more to it than that.
Oh?
Come on. We'll meet the girl downstairs. I've got to get out. Come along.
Davey, your sandwich isn't an old raincoat of father's.
Give it to him. Now listen, Sam. Those clothes upstairs, burn them. Yeah. Clean up everything. Anybody comes around asking questions, tell them you haven't seen me.
All right.
Not for 3 days.
Where can I get in touch with you?
You can't.
You'll come back?
Indeed, I will. But remember, you haven't seen me. And you don't know where I've gone.
I don't know.
That's true. You'll hear from me. Now open the door, see if anyone's about.
Yes.
The street was deserted, and the rain had started again as we slipped out. We kept to mean, badly lit streets as we made our way out of the town. Then, at the top of a hill, we left the lights of Penzance behind us. We hadn't said a word until then.
We'll separate at Lunyon.
How far is that?
Oh, 8-9 miles.
Oh? Oh. Where are you going?
A farm. I'll be hiding up for a bit.
Oh, the police, Davey?
In a matter of speaking, I had a fishing boat, Isle of Mull. We were carrying goods.
Liquor?
Of course. Picked it up from an Italian boat. A revenue cutter bought us. They insisted on taking the hatches off. I warned them not to. It was their own fault. I jumped for the other boat. That's when I got this bullet through the heart.
How did you get away?
We booby-trapped the hatches. When they opened them, she went up, sank, just like that.
How many were killed?
What does it matter? They're after me, though.
What about me?
Oh, the job. I told you, if you want it, it's yours.
Where do I go? Who do I see?
Cripple Z's, just down the road from Bottlup. Ask for Captain Manick. Tell him I sent you. Show him my letter.
That's all?
That's all. He'll tell you what it's about. Come on, I'll step out. I need to rest soon enough with this cursed arm.
It must have been nearly midnight when the little Welshman and I parted. He pointed the way to Cripple's Ease a mile further along, and then turned away, disappeared in the driving rain. Half an hour later, I found the huddle of abandoned mine buildings. And then against a crackle of lightning, I saw a house. I had reached Cripple's Ease and the job that was waiting for me.
What do you want?
I want to see Captain Manick.
I be Captain Manick. What do you want?
Dave Tanner sent me.
Who?
Dave Tanner. He told me to show you this letter. Oh. Hmm. Come in. My name's Jim Price. Davey said you had a mining job for me. I'm a miner. I was working in Italy.
Come in here. There's a fire. You can get warm. How long have you known Dave?
You were in the army together.
Where?
Italy, mostly. Casino.
Sit down. You're the deserter chap, aren't you? Oh, it's all right. Davey told me about it. We don't ask questions here. Does anyone know you're in England?
No, only Dave. This job you've got, how long will it take?
Not being a miner, I wouldn't know. Might take a week. I'll give you a flat rate of £50 and another 100 if you can do it in 2 days.
A big tin strike?
No.
Well, I don't see where...
All right, just a minute. Here. Now, have a look at this chart. These mines are finished. There's nothing worth working in them anymore. I've got another use for it. You see that long gallery running down under the sea?
Yeah.
It's called the Mermaid. Nearly half a mile long. Now then, what I want you to do is to blow a hole in the seabed at the end of it.
Blow a hole in the seabed?
Yes. You see the slope of the gallery? It starts about 100 feet below the sea level. Mm-hmm. Then at the end, rises to, well, by my figures, 20 feet under the bed of the sea.
My job is to drill through that 20 feet and let the sea in, huh?
Yes. I can tell you it's getting risky running liquor into England through the usual channels.
I see.
Yes. This will be safer. Our boat spots a buoy which marks the entrance of the underwater mine. Lowers the cargo and we haul it through the mine up to the shore.
Well, how?
A carriage drawn by a hawser. Oh, it'll work. Even underwater it'll work. I've had 2 men working on the shaft for a year now, straighten it out. All we need is a miner to finish the job. That's you.
It's nasty. Suppose the entrance gets jammed with rock after she blows.
No, I'll go down in a diving suit and clear it.
It's nasty. I haven't done undersea stuff.
But you know explosives and rock?
Yeah.
And there'll be nothing to it.
I don't know. What about Davey? Was he doing a job for you? Suppose the police get him and tie you up with it. What happens to me?
Oh, don't worry.
I don't like it.
Man, be sensible. You're a deserter from the British Army. You returned to England without papers. If not here, where would you work? I'd be offering you £150.
I should have stayed in Italy.
But you didn't?
No, I wanted to see Cornwall again. It was a mistake.
Not at all. Do what I ask and I'll see that you get a passage back to Italy.
No. No, it's too dangerous. I'm sorry. I'll take my chances somewhere else on another job.
Oh? And you leave me no alternative.
What do you mean?
I shall have to telephone the police in Penzance and inform them that the deserter has shown up. Looking for a job.
After what you told me? Now make me laugh.
I'm quite a respectable man in these parts. I doubt that the authorities would take your word against mine.
You're bluffing. Nobody can force me to do anything.
You think not? No, stay where you are, Mr. Price. I wouldn't hesitate to shoot you. You see, I'm in rather a desperate position. It's taken me a long time to find a miner to do this job. I couldn't bear to see you refuse. You still have a moment to change your mind. Hello? Would you ring the police station for me, please?
He wasn't bluffing. I knew that I owned only a few seconds to decide. It was a choice of arrest, conviction as a deserter, or doing a job which might mean my life. I had run away from death once before. I suddenly realized that I'd been running ever since. I had to stop. I looked back at Manic, smiling and sure with his pistol pointed at me.
Well?
All right. Hang up. I'll do it. I'll blow up your bloody mind.
Escape, under the direction of Norman McDonald, returns in just a moment. Boy Scout Week is now being celebrated across the nation. The scouting program is well known to almost every American. It includes character building, physical fitness, and citizenship training that enriches the lives of boys and young men in all walks of life. Get your son or your neighbor's boy to join this worthy organization. And now, back to Escape.
Manic put down the phone, opened a desk drawer, and took out some pound notes, handed me 10 and suggested that I get some sleep. We were to start work at 5 in the morning. I was pocketing the money when the door behind us opened. I looked around and saw an elderly man had entered.
I didn't know you'd anybody here, Henry.
It's all right, Father. This is Jim Price. He's going to work here a bit. He's a miner.
A miner, is he? Well, my boy, it's good to know there'll be a miner working here at last. I knew you'd see it my way sooner or later, Henry. At least we can make a start now.
Price is working for me, Father.
Working for you? Nonsense, he must work for me. I'll prove to the world that the Cornish mining industry isn't dead.
You may as well understand. I'm letting the sea into the Mermaid Gallery.
You're mad. You can't do it. I won't allow it.
That's what I'm going to do.
I won't allow it, I tell you. I won't.
You've no alternative. Mr. Price, perhaps you better leave us now. Go to the kitchen across the hall. One of the men will show you to your quarters.
All right. I went to the kitchen. I could hear the argument raging through the hall. There were two men sitting by a fire with mugs in their hands. One like a diminutive monk with a pot belly and rosy cheeks, and the other a long, cadaverous-faced man who looked at me solemnly as I entered.
Blimey, another one. Sit down, chum, sit down. I say, are you staying or passing through?
I'm going to work here. I'm a miner.
Lord love a duck. Is that slim? Now we don't have to worry about the ruddy roof falling in on us. My name's Fryer, Fryer O'Grady. You call me Fryer. And this here's Slim Matthews.
Jim Price.
Medic's hired you to blow through the seabed?
Yes.
Does the old man know?
Yes, I just left him.
Thought I heard argy-boggy.
It's gonna be trouble.
Well, I don't understand.
The old man's been working these mines all his life. Now he says he's found the richest tin strike in Cornwall.
Captain's right, though. Captain's right. Running liquor is tax-free, if you follow me. Too expensive to operate a mine these days.
I shouldn't want your job, Mr. Price. We've been sweating for a year down here. Funny feeling with all that sea over your head.
Oh, well, every man to his trade, I say. Come on, mate, I'll show you to your digs. Imagine you'll want to be up bright and...
Thanks.
See you in the morning, Mr. Price.
The little cockney showed me to my room, and it was about a half hour later that I heard a tap on my door. Yes? Mr. Manic.
Who's afraid you might be asleep? Look, I got something to show you. My son tells me you're an experienced tinner. Have a look at this rock. Maybe you'll believe me.
Hey. That's tin, all right.
Tis fabulous. The richest seam in the history of Cornish mining. Look at it. And my son, curse him, doesn't see it. He's going to let the sea into the mine. and he's brought you here to do it. You're the man who's going to wreck my life.